Hi, everybody, and welcome to the WTCDemolition.com podcast. This is the first podcast that we're doing, and by we, I mean myself, Gritavo, also known as Real Truther, and my co-admin at WTCDemolition, Cassia. Say hi, Cassia. Cassia, you seem ready to jump right in, so why don't you tell me what's on your mind when you think about the truth movement today?
Well, I'll tell you what I was thinking about this afternoon. I generally read 9/11 Blogger at least once a day, check in there once a day, and I read sites like truthaction.com, and I check out Alternet and Portland Indie Media and sites like that. And I noticed what I like sometimes is when there's cross-posting between sites, and today you, Gritavo, cross-posted an interesting comment from 9/11 Blogger over to WTCD, and I might have overlooked it at Blogger if you hadn't done that, but it's really interesting. And that is a post by someone named Solon, who is wondering why people like Rosie O'Donnell and Willie Rodriguez won't come right out and support architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, especially, you know, when they have a big announcement like their 1,000th member signing the petition. And, you know, doesn't that seem kind of weird?
It does. And, you know, I thought maybe what I could do is just read the comment in question.
Okay.
So I did, in fact, post it at WTCD. Which you'll hear us use as the abbreviation for WTCDemolition.com. And in fact, our website really has been under construction for some time. It's really just the blog right now. So when we say WTCDemolition.com, we really mean .com/blog. That said, let me go to the comment that I did post from the user Sullen, which, full disclosure here, I am not the user Sullen. Are you?
Yeah, and I'm not the user Solon either.
Okay.
Yeah, full disclosure, I do not have a posting identity at 9/11 Blogger or at Truth Action.
All right, I have posted myself at neither of those sites in well over a year, probably two. So anyway, let me read this comment from Solon, and probably I'll start towards the middle. Rosie O'Donnell is not supporting AE 9/11 Truth for some reason. She is supporting William Rodriguez. Maybe that's why. Although I don't see it as an either-or situation. So what the hell is that all about? I don't think she or Willie even mentioned AE 9/11 Truth during his interview on her new radio show. One would think that these people would be contacting AE 9/11 Truth and asking what they can do, and how they can help, and signing the petition, and encouraging others to do so, etc., and mentioning AE 9/11 Truth every time they talk about 9/11, especially when there are reporters and news cameras around, or they are being interviewed, etc. It makes you wonder where people's heads are at. What are they thinking? You wouldn't think they are clueless and have never heard about AE 9/11 Truth. That seems almost impossible. Even Jesse Ventura, I'm skipping ahead a little bit because it's a bit longer than I thought. Even Jesse Ventura didn't mention AE 9/11 Truth in his conspiracy theory show on 9/11. He also didn't mention that there is a huge grassroots movement either. Now, I'm going to stop right there because I think we've covered most of the interesting points from this commenter. And also brought up, you know, a lot of tangents we can go down. We could talk about the interview Rosie did with Willie Rodriguez. I, in fact, never heard that interview myself. And as far as Jesse Ventura's show, I did watch it on YouTube and was very disappointed in it.
Yeah, I suggest we leave Jesse aside for the moment because I didn't watch his show and I don't really know what's going on.
It was pretty terrible.
What's that?
It was pretty terrible, and I think that the mistake that people make is that they compare it to the nothing that exists, and they say, well, at least we got that. Now, what we should be comparing it to is, what if somebody were to make a really good show about 9/11 skepticism, what would that be like? And compared to that hypothetical show, the one that Jesse Ventura did was absolute garbage.
Okay, so that sounds really likely to me without having watched the show at all, maybe because I sense that it would just be too painful to watch, although I may watch it eventually. I do have a theory about what might be going on with Rosie O'Donnell and Lily Rodriguez.
You have a conspiracy theory, or?
Well, that's such a loaded phrase. Let's leave that out of it.
Okay, I was just kidding.
But
what is your theory about Rosie and Willie?
Well, to back up a minute, I think it's important that we clarify for our listeners that a lot of the time we are engaged in a certain kind of speculation that people shouldn't be overly invested in, especially emotionally. So what I'm going to say about Rosie O'Donnell and Willie Rodriguez is it's a theory that I'm entertaining. I certainly don't have evidence to this effect. I don't harbor animosity toward either of them. But when you look around the 9/11 truth landscape, you really have to be prepared to, expect the unexpected. So here's what I think. Willie Rodriguez, what is his testimony about? It's about explosions in the basement, right? I think most of us, when we heard that, being informed about the reality of the explosive demolitions of the towers as a whole, we assumed that, like, hey, Willie, you know, he knows what's up. He was there. He heard explosions in the basement. That was when they were, you know, taking out the under infrastructure all the way at the bottom of the towers. And he's a charming guy. He's credible. What a great representative for 9/11 truth. Now I think, you know, maybe, but what if there's something else going on? And another assumption that I think that you and I base a lot of our thinking on is that the truth movement probably was controlled to some extent from 9/11 on, you know, 9/11, 9/12, 2001, well, actually, the morning of 9/11.
Can I stop you there for a second? I think it probably started before that. I think that the plan for 9/11 included the plan for the 9/11 truth movement. I mean, that's
exactly.
My opinion.
Right. So, perhaps, let's say that's true. Let's just go with that. What about putting somebody in the building, someone, you know, a charismatic figure, somebody who would go on to get an award from President Bush, yada yada, nice guy, a person of color, you know, a Spanish speaker, and had him testify to the undeniable truth that a hell of a lot of bombs went off that day. Have him just talk about his direct experience, which was with the bombs in the basement, and the fact that Felipe David was terribly burned by some sort of explosion in the basement. Then, way later down the line, if they can't control the perceptions of the events, when they can no longer pretend that what we saw was a collapse, and when the idea that what we see when we look at the video record is catastrophic explosions, then you have the plan B, and the plan B is that there were bombs in the building. Oh, Louis Rodriguez saw the bombs, or heard the bombs in the building, in the basement. And he also maybe saw one of the hijackers in the building asking how many bathrooms there were, a couple months before the event. And then we have somebody like John Gold saying, you know, who's best buds with Willie, saying he talks about bombs, but he doesn't have an opinion about controlled demolition, or he doesn't say anything about controlled demolition. I think this is Willie Rodriguez is part of the plan B. The plan B is that, there were bombs in the building, but they were the kind of bombs that were there in 93, and Rosie O'Donnell is his pimp. She's shilling for him. That's one interpretation of why neither of them is publicly supporting architects and engineers, because architects and engineers is focused on the, you know, explosive demolition of the towers in a sophisticated, planned way, not just random bombs going off. Does that sound like at all in touch with reality to you?
Well, to play devil's advocate, I would have to bring up all these questions. For example, we know that Willy Rodriguez was working for a while with Jimmy Walter, that rich guy who I think he eventually came out as a no planer or something, or hologram planes. I mean, he was his own little freak show, but that, I mean, you would have to reconcile that, the fact that Willie has associated with people who would seem to have been advocating much more than terrorists putting bombs. So, I mean, it would seem that if what you're saying is accurate, that he would have, that would have been one of the plans that he was involved in, that he also would have been involved in working with people like Jimmy Walter to bring publicity to problematic truthers, let's say.
To problematic theories about hologram planes? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy Walter, I'd have to look it up, but I know that he pretty much at some point pulled an Uncle Fetzer and was going off about crazy stuff.
Yeah, that's kind of my understanding.
And that Willie Rodriguez disassociated himself from Jimmy Walter. He no longer works with him.
Yeah. So,
he no longer works with, this is William Rodriguez, no longer works with James Randi from the JREF forums.
Right.
But he used to.
Freaky coincidence.
That's just one of those coincidences.
I'm not sure there is a freakier coincidence in at least the online forum 9/11 truth world. The fact that he used to work for the guy whose message board is like, you know, the arch rival, the nemesis of 9/11 truth.
Right.
The James Randi educational forum. So in any event, none of those things contradict what I am suggesting. What it maybe just means is that he was a very busy sort of sleeper, that he was allowing people to interpret his story about bombs as being consonant with what we know about controlled demolition and not contradicting them. In fact, that's still basically what he's doing. And he could clear this up very easily just by making a public statement to the effect that the evidence collected by architects and engineers, among others, at this point, leaves no doubt that the towers were explosively destroyed on 9/11.
Now, to play devil's advocate again, and this is anticipating some of the criticism that we might hear from, somebody like John Gold. How is Willie himself supposed to decide whether or not the architects and engineers for 9/11 truth are right? I mean, Willie, I don't think, is trained in architecture or engineering. How is he supposed to? And then, in turn, how are any of us supposed to, in any credible way, claim that the architects and engineers for 9/11 truth have it right?
Well, this maybe is a topic for a future podcast, but this leads directly into the whole notion of the crippled epistemology. And whereas that recent paper by Cass Sunstein was talking about truthers as people whose epistemologies are crippled, like maybe we were born that way, I think actually the whole 9/11, the control of the 9/11 truth movement has relied on an active crippling of epistemologies, making people think that they are not capable of knowing things, are not capable of, for example, looking at the video record of the tower's destruction and accurately deducing from what they see certain facts, like that they were blown up, that big beams are being explosively propelled outward in a way that doesn't make sense from everybody's everyday experience.
Right.
Of
whether or not you're an expert, I mean, these things are pretty, they are common sense, let's say.
They're common sense to anybody who's lived in a human body on this planet with gravity, you know, and dropped stuff and had stuff break.
Right.
Some of it's far more complex, and that stuff is interesting also. But the idea that of the way things fall down, that's something that we can know. So, and people like Richard Gage and David Chandler do a great job of explaining in terms that lay people can understand quite easily. The fact, you know, we don't know how they blew them up. We don't know how they rigged the towers. We don't know exactly what kind of explosives were used, or whether it was explosives and incendiaries or super high tech, you know, combo explosive incendiaries. But we can see with our own eyes that what happened was a blowing up, not a falling down. So, with that in mind, people like Louis Rodriguez and John Gold can say, at the very least, I am able to see that these destructions were explosive in nature. I don't feel comfortable talking in any more detail about the theory behind that because I feel like it's the kind of science that's beyond me. But I'm not going to pretend. Two important things. I'm not going to pretend that what I'm seeing there is buildings falling down. And I'm also not going to pretend that it is beyond people's capacity to know or to see what is happening from the video record. So that's all Willie Rodriguez would need to say. I don't know what happened, except the buildings were blown up. And my direct experience of that was with explosions in the basement. Architects and engineers are doing a great job of trying to independently investigate the details around the destruction.
Okay, well, you brought up Cass Sunstein's paper, and this is the Obama staffer, Harvard law professor, who wrote that paper about infiltrating the 9/11 truth movement as one example of a group to be infiltrated with what he called cognitive infiltration. And so you mentioned the crippled epistemologies that we supposedly conspiracy theorists have because we don't read broadly enough. We don't have all the information that would make us realize that our conspiracy theories are wrong. But on the other hand, another aspect of that paper is his idea or advocacy of deliberately introducing dissenting opinions into groups like this, and I think that's an important point. What it seems that you were saying is that this idea that we can't know that, you know, these are technical issues that we laymen should not really have an opinion on, that is an example of the sort of thing that Cass Sunstein would like to see happen. That I should say, you know, given that this paper was written, I think, in 2007 or 2008, you know, I think this has been going on far longer than that. So this can hardly be called his idea.
Right. I think if anything, probably the best way to read that paper is as a report on what has already been tried rather than a proposal for something that could be tried in the future.
Right. And Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I think that it's one of those things that it comes out sort of out of nowhere. You know, a lot of us, well, everybody seems to have missed it the first time around. I mean, obviously, you know, I don't think that there are that many people in the truth movement who are reading the Journal of Social Science Research or whatever, wherever it was published a couple of years ago. But that does tell you that it was brought to light recently and given a lot of hype. The fact that we're talking about it right now, it's been mentioned on a lot of websites. Clearly somebody thought it was something that it was time for us to find out about and maybe be swayed by in some way to believe certain things or another. Like that they might start doing this, but that they're not, they haven't been doing it yet because they just came up with that idea.
So yeah, we're starting with a clean slate. Nobody's been doing this before. You might want to be on the lookout for people doing this in the future, but nobody up until now or up until the paper was written, you know, it was theory. It wasn't policy and it wasn't practice. So, whereas I think that a lot of us longtime observers of the truth movement, think that probably it has been practiced extensively.
So there's this interesting, and you know, not to spend too much time talking about the Sunstein or Sunstein paper, but, when we're talking about crippled epistemologies, that's something that he accuses us of having because we don't have enough information, because we only read conspiracy sites, let's say. We get all our information from InfoWars and 9/11 Blogger. And so that our epistemology is crippled. So that what he proposes in one sense is that we need to be helped, we need to be educated. And that's to say that on one level, the public is told, well, look, we have these crazy conspiracy theorists. They do not listen to reason. So what we need to do is to go into their sites and give them some truth, some logical, truthful arguments about why their conspiracy theories are wrong. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it, from the more conspiratorial standpoint and probably from the more correct standpoint, is that what they're actually doing is going in to a community that is actually coming close to reaching the truth about a subject and throwing stumbling blocks in their way by sowing dissent. And I think that it's interesting that Sunstein actually kind of has it both ways. In some senses, he's trying to convince his reader that, yes, these are crazy conspiracy theorists. On the other hand, he's sort of hinting that, well, you want to sort of disrupt their sort of community so that they don't, you know, conspire together to commit terrorist acts, so that there's some dissent. So did you sort of get a sense of that duality?
I mean, it's almost ironic in a sense that he is, you know, he's proposing that on the one hand that we are essentially crazy, and on the other hand that we are dangerous. And generally, you know, in real life, crazy people aren't dangerous. It's only in the movies that crazy people are dangerous. If our epistemologies are so crippled that we are, you know, in la-la land and sharing our la-la land views on the internet and spending a lot of time, you know, in our parents' basements typing on the internet about crazy crap, then there's no need to disrupt us. There's no need to infiltrate us cognitively. And it's also ironic that what he's proposing is exactly what we need, and that is more sources of information and more perspectives, but ideally ones that are coming from a position, you know, that are offered by people from a position of good faith.
Good faith, exactly. Because I was going to say also that probably, you know, if you start thinking of, well, if they have been doing this, what's an example of their attempts? I think that we've always kind of assumed that the no planes hit the towers people were disinformation. I mean, I don't know about you. I don't think that that is just something that people honestly believed. Maybe some people, but I think that the people who were actually most involved in spreading that meme to the point where others, you know, quote unquote debunkers could cite it and say, this is what the truthers believe. I think that those people who promoted it were very clearly working in bad faith. And as such, I wonder if the people who spread that were doing it as part of something like Sunstein describes. I mean,
I wonder that too. And it also ties in with my reading that he's talking not so much about our state as having crippled epistemologies as an act of wanting to cripple our epistemologies. And the thing about the no-planners that was so awful is that I think there really were people who got to the point where they did not know whether they could know that planes hit the building.
Right.
And at that point, they fell under the sway of arguments that I think are quite weak for planes not hitting the building.
Right.
So
which
there
went
are,
from...
There, I, are a lot mm-hmm. of, there are things that we can't know about 9/11, and there are things that we can know, and it's difficult to draw the line at some point. It's, you know, I feel confident that planes did hit the towers, that they were planes of some sort, and that they hit the towers. And that's for a variety of reasons. It's eyewitness testimony that I read, it's video that I've seen, it's the fact that it would be, you know, a lot easier to do that than to fake it. But contrast that to the Pentagon. I don't think a plane hit the Pentagon. I mean, I don't know that a plane hit the Pentagon, certainly with the same level of confidence that I do planes hitting the towers. And I don't know if we, you know, I don't think we can know. And then there's a faction within the truth movement that's trying to convince us that we can know that a plane hit the Pentagon.
Well, let me stop you there. I mean, we could know if a plane hit the Pentagon. If a plane had hit the Pentagon, we could know, because there would be, ample evidence. There would be all kinds of video. The same as with the planes hitting the towers. The reason that we can dismiss most of the, you know, infinitesimally small possibility that in fact we were deceived about that, the same reasons. You know, we had videos, multiple videos from multiple angles, at least of the South Tower being hit. We have numerous eyewitnesses. I mean, just, you know, a big number. For various reasons, if a plane had really hit the Pentagon, there would be similar, you know, mountains of evidence, and so that we wouldn't have to have this discussion. I mean, it would not be in question. The fact that it is in question among among people who are arguing in good faith that they're not convinced stems from the fact that there simply is not the same amount of evidence for planes, for a plane hitting the Pentagon as there is for planes having hit the towers. I mean, I think we could know. If a plane had hit the Pentagon, it would be much easier to know.
Well, that's why I'm saying that the weight of my belief comes down on the side of a plane didn't hit the Pentagon, because there's information that I could easily have that I don't have.
Right.
You know, there could be plane parts with serial numbers. There could be a pretty extensive video record. There could be eyewitness testimony that was, like, you know, not by guys who talk about how we discuss the way they've confabulated aspects of the story, like the plane cartwheeling on the lawn. You know, and I appreciate that man's candor, because I think that went on a lot and people aren't admitting it. But the fact is, that was like, that part was just making up a group of people making up a story and running with it. But it all boils down in my mind to the idea that we have epistemologies that have been deliberately debilitated. And some of that, a lot of that has come from the government, the commission report, you know, the official powers that be. But the insidious thing is that some of it's coming, you know, it's like the call is coming from inside the house. Some of it's coming from inside the truth movement.
Right.
That effort to debilitate our epistemological ability.
Right. And so, you know, using the no planes hit the towers, and also to not just to suggest that, you know, on the face of it, that's an absurd statement intended to confuse people, but that it also has these secondary effects of making people question whether or not it is appropriate to question a plane hitting the Pentagon, so that,
exactly,
you know, suddenly that becomes, well, that's like the no planes. You're a no-planer, and we definitely have seen that people in the truth movement using the term no-planer very unfairly, in most people's opinion, to refer both to people who think that no plane hit the Pentagon, or No Plane may have hit the Pentagon, to the people who think that No Planes hit the towers. But we also have, it takes other forms, and I think that one of the basic ones, and that really kind of, I think illustrates the divide between a site like, the users of the site like WTC Demolition and some of the users at 9/11 Blogger, is the taking of the official story to be true until proven false, as opposed to false right. until proven true, which is what our theories, our conspiracy theories, alternative theories, are, they, you know, we have the burden of proof. Well, you know, until our theories are proven right, we can't assume they're true. So when people in the truth movement assume that the official story, that aspects of it must be true just because they're part of the official story, you kind of wonder, you know, if that in itself is an example of our crippled epistemology in the truth movement.
I think it is. And within that topic, there's the issue of, on the one hand, a lot of people need to go through a process where they deconstruct the official story in their own mind and realize, you know, what they know, what they don't know, and what they don't know, they don't know. And then there are people who are obscuring the fact that maybe some of the stuff we think we know, we don't actually know. So it would be normal to watch a movie like Press for Truth and end up, you know, thinking a lot about the fact that we don't know a lot of things about, you know, the control of Mujahideen and indigenous resistance movements in various Arab and Muslim countries by Western intelligence apparatuses. But we don't know a lot about that. That's really interesting. Entire books can and have been written, about that. But why are we even talking about that? Why are we even talking about, you know, the Al-Qaeda guys? How do we know they were involved? And that's the point, you know, that leap that everybody made probably on the day of 9/11 to assume that Al-Qaeda was involved, to assume that those guys had anything to do with it, is, I think, being deliberately obscured by some people. You know, and that's why you get, like, very vitriolic responses to questions about things like what we call the pork chop transfer, the transfer of $100,000 allegedly to Mohammed Atta, allegedly by the ISI guy. Allegedly by the ISI guy. I mean, there's nothing inherently illegal about that. There's something suspicious about that, for sure. So,
well, it's one of those questions that, well, if true, so what? You know, if you can't answer the so what, then what does it matter if it's true or not? You know, this is one question that recently came up on the blog, too, about ICTS, which is the Israeli company that provided security at some of the 9/11 airports. And so the argument becomes, well, did they or did they not? Are they really Israeli or are they not? And I think that the real question should be, well, what are they alleged to have done wrong? Did they actually let on hijackers? I mean, what if these planes, and, you know, until we have proof that, like, definitive proof that there were these hijackers who did board these planes, I'm not sure what we're accusing ICTS of having done wrong. For all we know, what we really know is that large planes hit the Twin Towers. What those planes were is, to me, still an open question. Those planes may have taken off from some private airfield somewhere in Ohio, for all I know. You know, arguing about ICTS seems like, you know, it's, let's not put the horse before the cart. I mean, let's figure out first if in fact we can prove that there were these people on board, and that's not just a part of the official story that is being taken for granted without being proven, because there's so many aspects of it that are taken for granted without being proven, then, you know, why bother arguing about things that there seems to be no basis to make them an argument yet, because, you know, who knows? In the future, we might find out, yes, we have this information for maybe the flights took off from the airports, and so security was compromised, but not by letting the hijackers on. Sure, that's a possibility.
Right. Yeah, or in the case of you know, the recent pants bomber guy, it makes a lot of sense to me that maybe there was security, some sort of security malfeasance involved in putting a lone individual on a plane, you know, giving a lone individual past security, past normal security procedures so that he can get on a plane and do something that, you know, really is within the realm of possibility for a lone terrorist, regardless of what that guy's real motivations were, or whether that guy really is who we are led to believe he is, and all of that. But, you know, security could, like, slip a guy onto a plane, but that's pure conjecture. And the fact is, the hijackings are at the very most peripheral to the events of 9/11. I mean, that's where all the, you know, that was the big show, or the big show, I guess, was that was the, you know, the magician waving his hands while, meanwhile, he was doing something that you weren't supposed to see. So
right.
that fact is the crucial one, and the one that almost always gets lost when people discuss the hijackings.
Right, and I think, you know, this is something that speaks to the debate about whether or not this is the controlled demolition movement. Or whether it's something else. And
right.
I don't think that anyone seriously thinks that this movement should be only about the controlled demolition of the Twin Towers. But I do think that a very strong argument, and the reason why I even registered WTCDemolition.com in the first place, was that it is absolutely central to the crimes that day. The fact that these buildings came down, they neither needed the planes to hit them to make them come down, nor could they have been caused to come down by the planes. So the truth, I think, starts there. What happened to these buildings? And what does that tell us about the rest of the story? I mean, is it conceivable that these buildings were prepared to be demolished, and then coincidentally these hijackings occurred? Somebody knew they were going to happen. What if the hijackings had failed? How do you explain all these explosives in the building? I mean, you know, some of these questions really center on the fact that the buildings did have explosives in them. And if we can't prove that point, What point is there in debating anything about 9/11? What other aspect to it is there? I would argue that anything that does not involve controlled demolition inevitably is going to come down to a LIHOP scenario. Did they or did they not let the hijackers attack us?
Right.
And yeah, if they did they do it on purpose, or was it incompetence?
Right. Yeah.
So I think, you know, obviously we touched on a whole bunch of different issues here tonight, but I think that some of the recurring themes and really that we would like to get some more dialogue on, not just on our site, but on 9/11 Blogger itself, these questions of what is the truth movement advocating for? Are we simply advocating for a new investigation? Or have we matured to the point where we are able to say what that new investigation should focus on? Because as citizen investigators, we do not have to defer to some hypothetical panel of experts in the future that will be deemed to be conducting a new investigation. I mean, we know,
right.
We have already conducted our own investigation, and, you know, I say we, there's any number of people that can take the credit for that. And, you know, right now, we're at a very important point where awareness of these issues, you know, we say it every year, it's going to be mainstream soon, and you know, it certainly is happening. It's happening perhaps more slowly than we'd like. But at some point, these issues are going to reach the mainstream. We are no longer going to be in a they're ignoring us mode. We're going to be in a mode where they will have decided that they have to co-opt this movement and take it in a different direction. And it's at that point that we are going to have enough committed truth movement activists to talk to the public. And when the manufactured truth movement tells them this is what it's all been about, we have to be there to say, no, here are some other issues that are, in fact, more important.
Right. And I think you would agree that, in a sense, that has already started. That there, it's not, in terms of 9/11 truth being mainstream and really reaching the consciousness of, you know, many, many people, that's a future event. But the fact that there's part of the truth movement that has been co-opted and that is deliberately leading investigations and leading the discourse about 9/11 in particular directions and away from other directions, that's something that's been underway for a long time.
Right. And we didn't need Cass Sunstein to tell us that.
Right. And I'd just like to mention, too, there's no relation between Cassia and Cass Sunstein.
All right. Well,
it's not, there's, he gives a bad name to Casses everywhere.
I will take your word for that. As you know, I don't really trust a lot of people in the truth movement, and I can't say that you know I'm going to make an exception for you. But for the time being, I'll accept your word that you have nothing to do with Cass Sunstein.
Okay, and let me just add that if you, the listener, have made it this far in listening to our program, which was kind of all over the map tonight, and you have a question you'd like to ask or a topic that you'd like us to discuss, you should definitely submit it via the contact information on the blog at WTCD. Let me try that again. At WTCDemolition.com/blog.
Right, and that's World Trade Center, WTCDemolition.com/blog.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so, Cassia, thanks for, taking time out of your busy schedule to, have this conversation. I really hope that we can cut through a lot of the BS that gets posted online, and reach people on an individual level, and find some points of agreement.
Me too. Yeah. It's been great.
All right. So good night and see you next time.
Nope.